Greetings, soldiers, and welcome back to the Silver Screen Podcast, where today we're diving into a real celluloid curio, the 1990 version of Captain America. Yes, we're looking back at this low-budget gem, partly to mark the release of Captain America Brave New World, partly to remember a time when America actually fought against Nazis, and partly because, well, we just want to. And I am joined, as is often the case, by my co-host, DK. Hello, DK.
Hello. Hi.
I don't know whether to say thanks for this or apologize for subjecting you to it, but, you know, I'm sure we'll get into that.
No worries. And, I didn't know if it was going to be up to it, to be honest. I felt a little sick, but then I just realized it, you know, it was just a ruse to steal someone's car.
You've spoiled one of my jokes because that is my favorite part of the movie. I'll get to that. So, yeah, we're also joined by our regular comic book expert, Toby, calling in all the way from Germany, not, as it turns out, Italy. Hello, Toby.
Hi. I would say thank you for inviting, but I'm not sure I'm thankful for this.
Hey, you asked. You're like, oh, that sounds interesting. I wonder what that film's like. But now you know. Anyway, we'll be exploring how this film came together, what it actually got right, surprisingly, and what didn't quite hit the mark. From a budget blown in all the wrong places to a supposedly improved director's cut, plus some utterly baffling choices, this movie is at the least a fascinating mess. So let's get into it, because nothing says super soldier like carjacking people while pretending to be ill. Classic. Yep, you beat me to the gag, TK. In any case, I'm going to
I mean, it's not like it was a hidden thing in this film.
I know, just like twice.
that's unforgivable.
You did it again. Anyway, but yeah, so
they need that. The next Captain America film, if I don't see Sam pretend to be ill just to steal someone's car, then they're doing it wrong.
Oh, that's not open that kind of worms. If you start having a black man stealing people's cars, dude.
Oh dear.
We're not going down that road. But yeah. I can't get over how unheroic a lot of this is. I mean, the rubber ears on the side of the costume, the clear, like, plastic frisbee shields. I mean, I know it was 1990, but come on.
I like how it has no body definition. It just goes straight down. If you measure the width between his armpits and the width of his waist, I guarantee they'll be exactly the same.
It could be worse. He could look like the Rob Liefeld one, who's just like, you know, 90% chest.
I won't wish that on Matt Salinger. Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we dive into sort of the BTS stuff and then explaining, you know, a bit about the movie, because God knows it needs an explanation, and explaining what we thought of it, we're going to start as we always do, and I'm going to go around and ask everybody, what were your first experiences of this movie, and what did you think of it? Can you remember the first time you saw it? And I'm going to start with you, Toby, because I have a feeling that you're probably going to be like, it was about 3 hours ago. So, hey, what was the first time you saw this movie, and what did you think right afterwards?
Yesterday.
Okay, fair enough.
It wasn't today, it was yesterday.
And, initial thoughts?
I'm just fascinated by the amount of no fun anyone has in this movie. There's some weird shit in this movie, and nobody's having a good time doing it.
Why? Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of hard to say. Yeah, there's not really any fun to be found, I suppose, when you think of it like that. It's very straight. I think there's some decent performances in some areas, but... Yeah,
I mean, you have Red Skull as an Italian doing an Italian accent, and it's the most non-fun performance ever. Like, even Red Skull in the first Avengers had more personality.
And that's saying something, because that was Hugo Weaving. So,
yeah. I mean, is he, though, or is he just someone doing a bad William Sadler Grim Reaper impression?
Best
3 out of 5, Captain.
I cannot get over the fact that they made the decision to fix his face. Like, they did the Red Skull thing, and it looks really quite gnarly and everything for about the first 20 minutes. Then they fix him, and the filmmakers are actually quoted as saying, well, we didn't think people would want to look at that ugly skull face for the entire time. It's the bad guy! Crying out loud.
Also, the first face looked generally good.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I saw this and was like, wow, okay.
It's quite disturbing, and it's like, okay, if you stick with this.
The makeup people clearly did a good job. Didn't just fix it.
In fairness, he does look better than Elon Musk.
I mean, who doesn't?
It's really? probably less fascist as well, ironically.
Oh, very probably. Anyway, but so DK, I have to come to you next and ask you, what was the first time you saw this? Because I'm guessing it wasn't quite recent. It was probably like a while ago.
I saw this as soon as it came out on VHS. Wow.
Yeah, so you've got me beat then.
if you remember, it was at the time when everybody thought the next big thing was going to be superhero movies, because, you know, you'd had Batman, and then everybody was jumping on the bandwagon. You've got, you know, the Flash TV series. You've got She-Hulk, Bridget Nielsen dressing in some kind of stripper's outfit and advertising a She-Hulk movie. And you had this.
That's so weird, yeah.
Yeah, everybody thought, you know, think these movies were going to be the next big thing, and yeah, I'll be honest, I actually kind of enjoy it. I mean, you look back at it now and it's cheesy and it's garbage basically, but I think it's got its heart in the right place, and I kind of dig that. And yeah, you know, we were so starved of these kind of things back then. I mean, you've got to bear in mind that this is a decade before X-Men and Spider-Man, that kind of thing. So
yeah, I understand that, and I'd certainly see what you're saying with regards to that. And if you're comparing it to some contemporaries, like you mentioned the Flash TV series, I can see how you would compare it as that. But at the same time, my brain can't register the fact that this actually came a year after Tim Burton's Batman, which is like orders of magnitude just superior in every way.
It is, but the budget problems on this,
well, yeah,
obviously, you know, didn't help. It's, and when it's the whole canon Globus thing, you're kind of lucky that they got away as good as they did, to be honest. I mean, this could have been, I will put this a few ranks above the Corman Fantastic Four, at least.
I was just going to say, I mean, yeah, that was like 4 years later that they made that purely just to keep the rights, and nobody was intended to see it, the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie. Which, again, yeah, if you get a chance to seek it out on YouTube, please do. It's a fascinating curio of a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this 3 or 4 times now, and I don't ever ask me to watch that Corman Fantastic Four film.
See, I don't even particularly mind that either. I would still say it's better than whatever they just put out as the last one in like 2015 or whatever it was. That awful Josh Trank abomination.
To me, it ranks alongside waterboarding as a form of torture.
Anyway, we've ended up in an impromptu conversation about non-MCU Marvel films, which I suppose makes sense considering what this is. But initially you would say your impressions weren't that unfavorable of this, because you said, I mean, it wasn't really an era where we had a lot of superhero stuff, I guess, so you probably were just relieved to have
I was just glad to have something that I was, you know, I mean, I wasn't the world's biggest Captain America fan. I preferred Spidey, I preferred the X-Men back then. I was an angsty teen. But yeah, it had the suit, which, I mean, I was a fan of the old red brown ones when I was a kid, and you know,
wow. He, the 70s ones where he's basically a stunt biker.
Yeah, he's got a motorcycle helmet. yeah, I enjoyed those. So to see what at the point that I watched this would have turned a comic accurate suit, yeah, the Red Skull does turn it into looking like, you know, someone from Beverly Hills, but at the start he does kind of look Red Skull like. So
yeah,
you know, I just thought, wow, this is comic accurate. It's even got the actual Captain America comic book logo. And then, you know, but again, we were starved. We were just God, I'm sounding like some kind of 1920s pauper. We were just grateful for what we had at that point.
I kind of figured that might be the case. I can't necessarily relate to it on that level, because I discovered this much later than like when it first came out. It was when I was at university and living in a town in Newcastle with a bunch of friends. And it was pre-MCU, but it definitely wasn't like, you know, the shall we say, a very low amount of superhero films that that we had back in 1990. So by this point, we'd already had the Spider-Man films, possibly at least two or three, at least two, if not the third, sorry. The X-Men films had come out, and, you know, the Ang Lee Hulk, stuff like that. So that we'd kind of ushered in a bit of a better age of superhero movies, yeah. I would say.
I mean, at that point, the only Spider-Man I'd seen was the Hammond TV version.
Yeah, the Nicholas Hammond TV show, which, I mean, yeah, it is what it is. Also, you should have seen the Japanese one, because that is, of course, superior. But never mind. So, no, but so, like, it was probably around 2004, 2005 that I first saw this, and it was, I didn't know it existed. It was because one of the three people that I lived with, one of my roommates, was he had just random stuff that he'd brought from home, and we used to gather together on a Sunday when we weren't doing like university work or whatever, and we'd all just basically get slowly drunk and spend the whole day watching like old episodes of Family Guy in a row or some old TV or whatever. And one day, one of us, I can't remember who, it may have been me, found a VHS copy of Captain America 1990, and because at that point, I was well into superhero films, and I was fascinated by them in general and hugely loved all the ones that had come to the cinema. I was like, wow, I didn't know this existed. I'm really intrigued. What's this like? And they were like, oh, we have to put this on and laugh at this while we get.
I was going to say, were you into comic books at this point?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You'd be surprised. I'd sporadically bought a few comics when I was younger, but I was actually quite a late comer when it comes to comics. So my biggest introduction was just when Joss Whedon ironically wrote on Astonishing X-Men. And that's when I thought, oh, they're a big thing. And then from there, it kind of exploded into me buying a ton of Marvel stuff and the odd DC. But let's be honest, more Marvel, if I'm being truthful. And then since then, like, way overboard, tons of graphic novels. I've caught up with a load of stuff and got my favorites and stuff. But yeah, it was quite late on. But I mean, I knew comics and I knew, he said, the comic book movies, and even though there wasn't an MCU, I liked what we'd had. You know, I even liked, shamefully, the Ben Affleck Deadpool movie, you know.
Weirdly enough, I had this. I had a bunch of superhero movies on as video files on my old Apple iPad, back when it was just an iPad. And I do remember watching this more than I watched Daredevil, because,
wow,
holy shit.
See, I quite liked it, and I liked the director's cut of that Daredevil, I think, even more. But yeah, that's just me. I realize that's a very personal, weird thing. But yeah, I mean, to your point, I think it was because we were so starved of stuff. So when you had moments like, spoiler alert, Bullseye killing Elektra, and using the exact quote from the comic and the exact kind of thing from the panel, I was like, oh, it's just like the Frank Miller comic, because like 2 seconds worth of it happened to mimic what happens in a comic, and I was so thrilled by that, you know. But yeah, anyway, so yeah, I mean, we watched it, and it was more of a kind of watch and make fun of it while we're having a few drinks and just chilling out on a Sunday. And I was like, yeah, this isn't the best, really, is it? But I also remembered, like I said, having a fun time and it not being the worst thing in the world. And then, like I pointed out to you guys off air, I now own the film, because around the time that the first Avenger came out, 101 Films released it on DVD, clearly, as I said to Toby, to try and capitalize on the fact that the first Avenger was out and try and get some of the old, you know, grandma's shopping for the kids and picked up the wrong thing by accident money, because even the front cover is basically the front, the kind of the cover art more or less from the first Avenger, and it even has the original Avenger written on it as if it's like a subtitle, so it's kind of clear what they were going for.
Yeah, it does kind of give you that Asylum Pictures vibe, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, oops, we picked up the wrong Captain America film. To the point that actually, if you look at the very back, when you're reading about it, the very last paragraph just says, this is the classic 1990s MGM version of the character, as if it feels the need to put a, like, disclaimer, you know? But, so, yeah, I mean, but because it was out, and I think, like I said, it was about £5 or £6, and I remembered having vaguely fond memories, I did buy the DVD of it and was like, oh, I'll buy it to have it. Plus, I was trying to be a completist at that point and have, like, a little bit of, to try and get every Marvel film. I've also got the, as we mentioned earlier, the 1970s Doctor Strange TV movie on DVD in the other room, and all of the kind of even things that I didn't particularly like or that weren't popular, like the Tim Story Fantastic Fours I've got in there, you know, the Ghost Rider movies,
anything that came out. Those Fantastic Fours. I don't care what anybody says. They're
we'll get to it because we're reviewing one of them in a few in a couple of months' time. So I enjoyed a lot of them. Like I said, it's kind of weird to look back now that we've had so many things and such kind of weirdly comic accurate stuff. But there was a time when I was like, yeah, the Ghost Rider a film with Nicolas Cage was pretty great, actually. You know what I mean? So, again, that's don't everybody tune off. That's just me. Sometimes I have no taste, okay? but yeah, so I'm just waiting until you see what I say about this film anyway, before you decide that. So, no, like I say, a very different kind of approach to it from me than you, but I had a feeling you might have seen it, you know, out of the box, as it were, brand new. Yeah. Weirdly enough, I did see that there weren't many places where it actually got a theatrical release. A lot of places it went straight to video, including, I think, here in the UK. I don't think it actually got a cinema release. I could be wrong. You'd be able to tell me, probably.
No, as far as I'm aware, it didn't. We just went straight to VHS.
And as you say, it's by the kind of Canon, Golan and Globus group, kind of low-budget people that made, like, Superman 4 and Masters of the Universe and various less than high-budget things.
They have form, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Freaking Electric Boogaloo.
The best thing about that film is the title, ironically.
Yeah.
Anyway, so without further ado, then, we've kind of explained our places that we came to the movie. And as I said, we're going to jump into a little bit of behind the scenes. I have one thing I wanted to bring up and maybe some more later on down the line. But DK, I always rely on you for a little bit of behind the scenes. So please enlighten us. How the heck did this movie come into
existence? Well, yeah, it's not actually a Canon film production. They ceased making new movies due to financial difficulties in 1989, although a producer, Menahem Golan, who was one half of the Golan Globus partnership that owned Canon, he was able to keep the rights to a Captain America film by setting up 21st Century Movies as a new production company and transferring the movie rights to them. God, why can't they do this with Spider-Man? Golan had he had good faith in the property and hoped this film would kickstart his new company. However, he struggled to raise the movie to continue making pictures, and 21st Century Films only made a handful of movies before going bust themselves in the early 90s. I mean, it's shocking when you look at the quality of it. Originally, Michael Winner was slated to direct this back when it was in production at Canon Films. And they got the rights. Canon got the rights, and Jeff Sprouse, who worked on the movie, producer, they wanted to do a big budget reboot compared to the, you know, the ones we mentioned earlier, the Red Brown movies. So he would take his Comic-Cons, he'd take the stuff around Comic-Con with scripts and original art. And get this, he wanted Jeff Bridges as Captain America.
Yep.
Justin Bateman as Bucky. He wanted Carl Weathers as Sam Wilson, Peter Fonda as Red Skull, and Alan Rickman as Baron Zemo.
I want to see that movie.
No, that script, it starts with Cap and Bucky fighting Red Skull in World War II and Cap being rocketed into the ice. After being thawed out in the present day, Cap and Falcon work as government agents. Oh, it's already sounding dodgy. And go after Baron Zemo, who wants to free Red Skull from cryogenic freeze. This is sounding very Austin Powers. To find the cosmic cube, weirdly enough. After Zero, Free Skull, Captain Falcon come in for the epic final battle. Now, Stan Lee does have a cameo in this.
It's cut, unfortunately, but yeah.
Exactly. It's a blink and you'll miss it. It's so blink and you'll miss it. It's on the editor's floor somewhere. the footage has been lost. He did fly to Yugoslavia and film a cameo at the crime syndicate meeting scene, but it got cut. So, and weirdly enough, as we were talking earlier, Captain America's costume is made by the same costume shop that made the suit for Batman and Batman Returns.
Wow. You would not think that. It's very
You
basic.
Really would not think that. You would think it was from the Poundland down the street.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, apparently the costume was made of heavy rubber. It was heavily padded. Really? And did not breathe. The filming took place in Yugoslavia with temperatures as high as 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Salinger lost 25 pounds during shooting and at one point came very close to heat exhaustion. So, yeah. Now, obviously, it's, you know, you can tell. It was originally budgeted at about $6 million. Days into filming, Menahem Golan was unable to close his bank financing for the film, and the bank pulled out. They got enough to shoot the opening of the picture, which is the scene in Italy where the boy's kidnapped in a proper fashion. But the rest of the picture was hit and miss, as there was literally no reliable cash flow. One of the producers, Tom Karnowski, was literally told to travel to this sounds so dodgy. Was literally told to travel to countries like Bulgaria and Hungary with a suitcase to pick up cash that the filmmakers were told would be there. Sometimes he would be given 5,000, but usually there was nothing. So they just shot it as fast as possible and used that momentum to finish the suit.
It is so wild to think of the way that... And that's kind of what I alluded to earlier, because I remember reading that, obviously, the first 20 minutes, they kind of blew their entire budget on. And it shows, because for me, that is the best part of the movie, and that is the first... Like, watching the first 20 minutes, you think, wow, they're actually making a serious attempt at a Captain America movie, and everything looks, for 1990, pretty good. You know, it's all well-directed, but my word, you can't half-tell that as soon as you end that opening scene, it's just very much... let's see what money we can scrape together as we go, you know?
I did read that while they were shooting, there were several occasions, they actually ran out of film because of the budget, they couldn't replace those film canisters. And because there were people from the studio on set watching, Payan would just tell the cameraman to just keep acting as if there's film in the camera and just keep shooting. Otherwise, he was just worried that the entire thing would get shut down.
Yeah.
Now, Payan and the producers wanted two different actors for the role of Captain America: Matt Salinger for Steve, and former pro football player Howie Long for Captain America. Long was asked and agreed to it, but then Marvel told them that they could only use one actor for both roles. Payan also wanted to use the black suit Captain America costume.
One that was currently in the comics at the time,
and Marvel told him no. So then he asked if he could make the suit more tactical with a duty belt and a bit more armor. Again, Marvel said no. And it's
probably for the best, because when they do that in First Avenger, it looks terrible. It's my least favorite of the MCU costumes, when they just randomly add the Rob Liefeld pouches and the frigging things. It's like, no, come on. Lean into it.
it's weird. It says, according to a spokesman, Marlon Brando was scheduled to appear in the film as Red Skull when Michael Winner was still attached to direct. However, later, Michael Winner admitted that he didn't even talk to Marlon Brando about the project. It was just bullshit. So...
I love that this film is just... Like, we could probably do something more professional than this.
Exactly. In July 2011, to coincide with the recent release of Captain America's First Avenger, Payan toured the country with his director's cut of this film. It's about 40 minutes longer, and apparently there's a number of scenes showing Steve Rogers coming to the realization that he was always a hero and superhero within, and he wasn't just a hero because of the costume and the serum. The director's cut in Vegas and Austin sold out with 600 to 700 people with huge lines outside at midnight. Now, in December of last year, it was revealed that the original version of this film has been digitally scanned for release. There was an online screening with a small group, and the original version is said to be radically different. It would need to be, let's be fair. Said to be radically different and vastly superior to the release version, with a much darker tone, non-linear flow, about 30 minutes of never-before-seen footage, and a new soundtrack and ending. It was said to be a political paranoia thriller. It was taken from Albert by the studio, chopped up and re-edited. Priscilla Page, Empire Magazine, was in attendance. She said this version of Captain America is dark, moody, melancholy, and beautiful, and she gave it 5 stars.
Wow.
And,
I'd be fascinated to see it, because, I mean, there's...
I do. I would. I'd love to see that.
How different could it be? And I did read somewhere that they basically, to kind of make it look better, they took out most of the action, because those were scenes that were filmed at the kind of studio request, and they were obviously cheaply done, don't look great. So it's more of a character study, and it doesn't have that much action in it, and I'm like, and that improves it? It just seems like a weird kind of...
Maybe less carjacking. I don't know. And finally, I've got to end on this. In an interview with the publication Retro Junk, Ronnie Cox said that this movie, and I quote, remains to this day the finest script I have ever read.
Yes.
How those guys messed that film up, I will never know.
Yes, you've got to love Ronnie Cox, Star Trek, RoboCop, and Captain America 1990. Yeah, I read that. Yeah, finest script he's ever read. Ronnie Cox, to be fair to him, Ronnie Cox and Ned Beatty try their absolute best in this movie. God,
yeah.
You've got to give it up to them. They are doing their best with the quest.
Yeah, it's... I remember when I did watch this the first time, convincing myself it was a quality movie because it had Ronnie Cox and Ned Beatty in it. Mm. You know how you kind of try and give yourself Stockholm Syndrome sometimes?
Well, they belong in a better movie. I mean, no disrespect, but Matt Salinger and I can't even remember the name of the guy who plays the Red Skull. They're, you know, one class of Asylum film. And then you get the scenes with Cox and Ned Beatty and you're just like, it belongs in a much better movie.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing their best.
I mean, that first scene where he's behind the podium and he's on about, you know, if we don't take this medicine, we're going to die. And you just think, this looks good if it had not been filmed on, you know, a Sony Betamax camera circa 1983.
Yeah, a wind-up camera that only just had film put in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? But, I have one thing to add to that, and this might appeal to you, Toby. You may even be able to offer some insight into this one. I found out that the movie was chosen to be part of the famous German Die Schlechtesten Filme aller Zeiten series, 2013. It was aired in April 2019 on the German TV network Tele 5. Schlefaz apparently is a German abbreviation for the worst films ever, and in that series two hosts present the whole film and make fun of it. Toby, are you aware of this at all?
I don't watch it, but I am very aware of this.
Did you know that they'd covered this movie?
I did not. I don't know what they cover. They just cover bad stuff.
I'm assuming it's like a German version of like Mystery Science Theater, something along those lines. But yeah,
not completely, but it goes into similar directions.
Yeah, the fact that it's got like the worst films ever in the title, more or less, is kind of all right. We get it. Cool. I just found that fascinating. But anyway, so yeah, we're gonna get into a little bit about the what we all thought about the various bits of the movie. We may as well start with the writing and the plot. So, Toby, because you haven't had a chance to talk while we've been doing all behind the scenes and stuff, what did you make of the writing and the plot of this thing? Did you find any recognizable elements from the Captain America story that you're now familiar with? And what worked, what didn't work? Just, yeah, feel free. Tell us whatever your thoughts are on the writing.
I think if you gave me just an overview of what the plot is going to be, I would probably say it's a good movie. It's a good idea. There's some weird choices. Okay. But, you know, you can have fun with those if you want to. They clearly didn't, but you could if you want to. But it feels like they wrote a first draft of the script and then just did not bother to improve it or try to make it better. Someone said, hey, you know, maybe that's weird. Maybe have more time between he's coming back and then she's getting killed like 5 minutes later. Maybe we need more time between that because that just comes across as pointlessly cool.
It's weird that you say that because that was one of the things that I noted this time as well, was that, like, if you think about it, like, when they made Captain America the First Avenger, it is a full movie that is basically just the first 20 minutes of this film. So you could have extended that into a film of its own because that it feels so rushed. It deals with the sort of Captain America origin really quickly and just seems to be in a hurry to kind of get it out of the way. Whereas nowadays, that would be the movie, you know? So, did you find that as well, or was that just
me? I mean, I don't mind that they did both, but the pacing was just so weird. Why did they could have just killed her somewhere at the end so that we have actually time and that it makes the pace, that the pacing makes sense and doesn't, like, he comes back and for us as the audience at least, immediately she gets killed like 5 minutes later.
Yeah, his like, old
and this is just unnecessarily cool for the audience. Like, you gave us a sweet moment and immediately kill her and take it away. What's the point of this? Because, like, it's not trying to establish that they're bad, because we know.
Yeah.
It's not establishing anything. No, I mean,
it's actually quite a heartfelt scene when, is it Bernie, sort of goes on about how she waited for a long time and then eventually married because she wanted to have children, and that's why she's now got Sharon. And it's quite nice. I mean, I really would prefer that they didn't just put the same actress who plays Sharon in old age makeup to play her mum. because that just jars horribly. That's a very hang on. But other than that, yeah, that's quite a sweet scene, you know.
And then it's taken away 5 minutes later for no reason.
And I will say,
harm everyone.
I would complain about how weird it is that Captain America's just like, well, my old girlfriend's dead, but I'm now going to hit on her daughter. But that's literally exactly what happens in the comics, so it's kind of hard to criticize it without, you know, getting into that whole can of worms anyway. But, cool. So, sorry to interrupt. Any other thoughts then, Toby, before we pass the DK for a bit?
Yeah, I also think that just none of the characters are fleshed out in any interesting ways. Like, I'm trying to think. Like, okay, the stuff with the president, that he sees him as a child and then later becomes president. That's a cute idea. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, we get a little bit about the president then, and then that's basically it. Like, it's just kind of very... And then there's like this whole like thriller plot with like that people near him betrayed him, but it's like, it's just so randomly put in.
Yeah, that's a one. I mean, yeah, that's a very fine line, because on the surface, when you read it, and it's like Captain America has to stop people who are trying to attack the president because they don't agree with his environmental policies, and it's like, that's potentially just going to be really, you know, Star Wars Episode One level of boring if you're not handling this in the right way. Like, boo, we don't want to recycle. You know? It's not exactly high stakes, you know. It's not, you know, we're going to open a skybeam and destroy the world, really. But yeah, I mean, I get it. It's a political type thing, and that's what Captain America is and was in the comics. But yeah, it's not a thrilling plot, and I can see why they had to include the Red Skull and, you know, the crime families, and that's perhaps why they went the Italian route with it or whatever. But I really was just letting the plot wash over me and just thinking, oh, let's just get to some heroics, I guess. Sorry, go ahead.
Someone on the set needed to be self-aware enough to say, this is silly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Have so let's know that this is silly.
Yeah.
Let's just know this and try to have a little bit of fun with this. And not play it so straight that it's...
I think for me, though, part of what makes it funny is that they play it so straight, even when they're doing really ridiculous things. Like I said, like the double carjacking the Captain America, like, I'm sick and then I steal your car, is hilarious because it's so stupid, it's so unheroic, and it's just like, what? So it's kind
of... But I feel like that carjacking thing is one of those things that is actually genuinely silly. Like, I think that's not really a point of, oh, it's, I mean, they play it straight, but like the script, I felt like in this moment, the script knows that this is kind of stupid.
Oh, I don't think it does. I think you're giving it too much credit, to be honest. But, fair enough.
In most cases, it's just.
Yeah. No. I know what you mean. It really wants everything to be, you know, grandiose, and some of it works. Like I said, I really like the kind of president storyline, that he sees Cap as a boy and becomes this kind of idealistic, although maybe that's just my desire to have an American president who's actually got, you know, morals. I quite like that storyline, and the way he kind of was childhood friends with Ned Beatty, he then becomes a reporter and stuff. I like those characters. Like I say, I think because they're good actors as well, those are kind of the best performances in the film. And it's hard to think of anybody else that really makes any impact. I don't know if you felt the same way, or was there any other actor that kind of stood out, or any subplot?
No, I generally agree that like these things are good, but, you know, beyond the general idea, it's not pushed forward. Like, there are great ideas in this movie, and great moments, but there's just nothing built upon them. Like, you have this cute storyline with the person. I really like the storyline. And then after we have established the storyline, nothing interesting happens.
No, because you get that threat about, like, now my gas is going to mind control your idealistic president and turn him evil. And it's kind of like, again, don't play that straight. That's ridiculous. At least lean into how camp and stupid it is if you're going to do that, you know. But I see exactly what you mean with that, absolutely, yeah. DK, what about you? Any thoughts on the kind of overall plot or the structure of this thing?
Structure? Really?
No. I use the term very loosely.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that whatever script Ronnie Cox read radically changed during filming. It's, you can kind of see the tone that they were going for right at the start, as you say, when they just blew all their budget. And then it just seems to have kind of collapsed into shit, need some money, you know, go and pick up a dodgy briefcase kind of thing. What can we film? Oh, we'll do this. Where are we? Oh, we're on a street corner. Yeah, let's get some
It really did. It felt like, yeah, we've got an empty road. There's no cars coming. Quick, chuck the costume on Matt and we'll film for 10 minutes. You know,
yeah. Kind of an alleyway. There's an alleyway. Look, get some kids. Sit them down. Give them a ball. I think it's hard to judge on this one because it's easy to judge a script when you see how it was intended when it reaches the screen. I think this is one of those films where we don't really know what it's like until we see, I presume, Payan's cut, and then we can slag it off. Then it's a case of, it's kind of like a Schrodinger script. You don't really know how it was supposed to turn out. I mean, you know, all you've got is Ronnie Cox saying that. But I mean, you know, he could have been drunk as a skunk when he said that. But it's, yeah, the first little bit, it's all right. And yeah, the little bit of schmaltz at the start where Steve's, you know, saying goodbye to his family and friends as he's off to the thing, it's okay. There's a nice little tone. I'm presuming that's where, after that kind of thing, well, you know, even the fact that he now lives in, he's no longer from Brooklyn and he's now come from Redondo Beach.
And apparently yeah. Chainsmokes.
Yeah. I don't remember. I mean, I might be wrong, but I don't remember young Steve Rogers having polio.
No, that was new. I think it was more to really emphasize the kind of the weakling aspect that they did in the comic and that we know from the kind of Chris Evans one.
I mean, to be fair, you know, in this day and age with Kennedy in charge of health, it's, you know, it's probably more likely. So people should see this and see what they're going to have to deal with. But
I mean, yeah, I think it was it was more to do with the fact that it would be easier to tell Matt Salinger to fake a limp than it would be to try in CGI in 1990, you know, the way they did on Chris Evans to make his body look a bit more feeble or whatever.
I mean, some of the lines are so silly, but they kind of work. Yeah. I like, oh, an American, just when I need help with my English lessons.
My favorite cheesy delivery in the film, and it's during some of the better stuff, it's when he's saying goodbye to Bernie, and he's like, I love you, Bernie. And she just out of nowhere just goes, God bless you, Captain America. Like straight out of a propaganda video.
Yeah.
I could not help but laugh at that.
Oh, God. And then it's, you know, Red Skull going, do you think I would make a good president? And you're like, whoa, we've already got one Nazi up there.
I've actually written in my notes, sadly, in this day and age, you probably could, mate.
It's probably not a criminal enough. I think the first 10 minutes, you can judge the script, and it seems okay, even if it's kind of cheaply made. After that, I think it's kind of all bets are off. And now I do think you will get little snippets, little beats from the original script in here, such as some of the, you know, some of the dialogue, some of the subplot thing going on. But it's just so hard to tell what was originally intended and what was just spur of the moment to try and save a production.
Well, the thing with that is, I mean, I'm not going to go through them all, but you can look it up, and there were so many different variations of the script. I mean, the characters that were going to appear in this thing at one point, you know, obviously we know that it was going to have, like, Falcon in there at one point, and, you know, the Howling Commandos, or Baron Zemo, I think Arnim Zola maybe at one point, and just, like, any number of characters from the Captain America comics were going to appear, and then in various drafts of the script, it sounds like it must have been through at least, like, 20 drafts, because in the end, you just got the cheapest possible option, no huge, like, Marvel cameos outside of, you know, Captain America and Red Skull, and a few, you know, lip sync references to them. And yeah, it just feels, even the actual overall plot was very, like, it sounds, from what I can gather, like they were kind of trying to make something that would be similar to what turned out to be the Winter Soldier years later. Like, they wanted to make a political thriller about people trying to take over the government and Captain America having to infiltrate and get to the bottom of this. And there's perhaps a tiny drop of that in this movie, but that's not really what it is, you know. And yeah, the Red Skull's daughter's in this movie. Again, she had apparently had a much bigger role because she was coming into her own in the comics, the character seen at that time. But she's in here and does virtually nothing. I think she kidnaps Sharon at one point, and then that's about it, you know. So yeah, very weird situation, I think, with regards to what were they trying to put on film. Because I don't think they knew. I think, like you said, it was very much a matter of which actors have we got today, how much money have we scraped together, what can we point at?
And, yeah.
It's a shame, because like I said, that first 20 minutes, if they'd been able to keep on at that kind of pace and that budget and that idea, there could have been something good there. There really could. And there is, like I said, glimpses of good ideas in some of the plotting and some of the acting, but it's bogged down in cheapness, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, what do you get when you know? As we said, the company was in trouble for quite a while, and it showed on a lot of the productions. I'm surprised, looking back. You can see the rot setting in with regards to something like Superman 4, because so special effects, holy Toledo. Oh, yeah. I'm surprised Masters of the Universe came out of it looking as good as it did.
Yeah, and even then, it's not, you know, that's not going to carry away.
No, it's not, you know, Lucasfilm thing. But, you know, for a cheap early 80s, you know, I mean, it was late 80s, yeah. But it looks like an early 80s kind of sci-fi sword and sorcery thing. It doesn't look too bad. No. But when you look at some of the others that Canon and Golan Globus were putting out, it's
they weren't really a byword for quality, were they, when you think? But no, just to get it over with then, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but talking about Marvel references, there is reference when the little excited kid in Washington is talking about Captain America. He also name checks the Submariner and the original Human Torch, who were the very first Marvel heroes predating Captain America, and would eventually form a team, the Invaders.
Weird name with
Captain America.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, that the kid that plays Ned Beatty.
Yeah.
It's Ned Beatty's kid.
It is, yeah, I did read that. The younger version of his character played by his own kid. Good casting. Yeah. There is a Senator Kirby in the movie, obviously a reference to Captain America co-creator Jack Kirby. Captain America, of course, was created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, not Stan Lee, who had nothing to do with his creation, though he did come up with the idea of freezing him in ice and unfreezing him as an Avenger in Avengers issue 3. I'm just getting into nerdy comic book lore at this point, so I'm going to shut up and stop talking about that. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I'm just going to my notes and just saying that there are so many things I pick up on. Like I've already mentioned, I think it races through the basics of the Captain America origin, and it doesn't give it the depth or the impact that the movie The First Avenger eventually would, and shows that when you devote the time to it, you know, that's a movie within its own right. Similarly, in terms of a plot hole, like the Red Skull isn't frozen or anything, but he's just said to have been hanging around for 30 years waiting to enact this plan and randomly making historical martyrs. Like, again, if lead into the funny stupidity of it when it's talking about, like, oh, I should never have foolishly, you know, assassinated JFK and, you know, Martin Luther King and all this. I just kept making martyrs. Even disregarding that for a second, the maths of, like, 30 years just doesn't make any sense to me. Either this film is set in the 70s or somebody just really miscounted or doesn't know when the Second World War was. Because 30 years from 1945 is not 1990. Anyway, I know it's the least of our worries, but it bugs me when I pick up on stuff like that and I'm like, hang on. A lot of good character stuff, I think, but kind of hidden away. The very convenient, you know, Cap finding the Project Rebirth room from back in the 40s and the convenient diary that was just left there. It's very, excellent. We got very lucky.
Yeah, there is an element of Scooby-Doo to the plotting.
There just is, yeah. And, I want to like the action sequences, but it is a lot of schoolyard punching and stuff at times, and at least he gets to throw a shield, I suppose, to dispatch the bad guy at the end. So, anyway, any last thoughts on the writing and the plot before I move us to the acting?
I like how you said acting and then chuckled.
Yeah, the acting, the word acting was in inverted commas within my actual voice there. I don't know if you can tell, but yeah. So, no. Well, we'll move on then, because I presume not. So, yeah, we haven't even mentioned this fact, but again, this was one of the things that blew my mind when I first learned about this movie, that Captain America in this film is played by Matt Salinger, who is the actual son of J.D. Salinger, yeah, the author of Catcher in the Rye. Mind-blowing.
I don't recall him in anything else, though. Oh.
I don't think he's ever acted in anything else. I mean, to call him wooden would be an unfair, you know, besmirching the name of Mahogany at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I do think he's kind of got a little... He's got an earnestness there that
apparently he's actually starting quite a lot of things.
Do think there are times when when Salinger just gets it kind of right in this. He's not going to compare with like Ronnie Cox and Ned Beatty as far as performances go in this.
He gets the kind of jingoistic flag waving cheesiness part of it.
Yeah,
I think quite right, but he doesn't quite nail the emotion. Even getting out acted by, like I said, a not particularly good actress in tons of prosthetics playing her older, you know, her own older mum, and acting better than him on the screen at the time, I think. It's probably fair to say.
I think he makes a better Steve Rogers than he does.
I disagree. I think he makes a better Captain America than he does.
I can quite buy into that whole setup at the start where he's, you know, talking to his family and stuff. And then the moment, and it's not necessarily his fault, but the moment it cuts to him in the plane with that mask on, and your first thought is dark. You know?
The mask and costume don't help, though. I mean,
no.
I could never get over the fact, again, sorry to jump ahead to the production, but the fact that instead of having holes in the cowl, like it's obviously supposed to be drawn in the comics and stuff, they just made fake rubber human ears to stick on the side of it. Like, what? Why? Who decided this? The idea of not just cutting a hole in the cowl because it didn't look quite right, and it's just so silly. You just, when you know that, you can't not look at it, and it makes it just look so stupid.
I think the problem is, as far as Captain America's original costume goes, no matter how you do it, it's not going to translate well to the screen. I mean, you know, even when they tried to do a comic accurate version in First Avenger, they had to make it look like a silly one while he was up on stage.
It was designed to look like a USO show version, but at least they did include it as an Easter egg, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but even in that First Avengers films, he looks okay, but, you know, when you put him alongside Tony Stark in the Iron Man suit, or even Hawkeye, they look, you know...
He looks fine in the Avengers movie, to be honest. I don't know.
I could still never buy the whole cowl thing. I don't know, maybe this film gave me PTSD. I don't know what it is. Salinger is okay. Ronnie Cox, Ned Beatty, I can't say save the film because it's beyond saving, we'll be fair. But yeah, they lift it up to a level where it would be before. I mean, you've got Darren McGavin chewing up the scenery like he's still playing Kolchak.
Oh, wow. You've hit our demographic there, dude.
Yeah.
We had to leave behind a solid percentage of the audience.
I don't know why I must have blanked it out or just not realised it, that Melinda Dillon plays his mother. That was I was shocked at that. And, you know,
you'll appreciate this. I was quite shocked that Bill Mumy turned up.
Yeah, Billy Mook.
Star of Lost in Space.
Well, I know him more from B5, obviously.
But... kind of gathered Babylon 5, yeah.
I'm always be
young Will
Babylon
Robinson
bitch
to me.
But he looks...
Oh, that Twilight Zone episode, actually, he's pretty famous for as well, the whole... It's good that you did that.
Yeah, or the movie. We've just done the movie and he was in that.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But, it was surprising that a couple of cameos in this. I was quite pleased with that. I don't know. I mean, Scott Powlin as the Red Skull.
Yeah, the old guys on Skull Rosso. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's terrible. I'm not gonna, you know, hide my disdain. It's a terrible performance. It's a terrible accent, like you said, that doesn't know whether it's Borat or whatever. The fact is that you can blatantly tell the overdub jokes, like he's saying something completely different, and they've dubbed a new joke in like post. And yeah, it's just so bad.
I don't know.
Like I said, it's why you would take away the one strength, which was the really gross looking makeup that really, you know, it impacted and was like, ooh, it's the Red Skull, and it's, you know, he's.
Even I do.
The terrible special effect at the start for the rat thing, it looked horrendous, but at least it was kind of something. You know?
It was an effort, yeah. I do remember that when I first watched this. I remember, again, we were hard up back then, so bear with me. I do remember being blown away by the Red Skull makeup at the start.
Yeah, but me too, yeah.
For the rest of the movie, especially towards the climax, I expected him to, I don't know, maybe pull his face or pull a mask off or something.
Similar to the first Avenger, yeah, where it's like, yeah. Okay, you want to not have it all the time, so have it be a mask or something. But as it is, you kind of end up where I watch the sort of everything after the first act, and I'm like, why is Captain America fighting the Punisher villain Jigsaw? Because that's who it is, you know?
You know, someone put that in the comments on the YouTube video that I watched.
Yeah. Oh, wow, okay. I mean, it is. It's true. It's just bizarre. And
I don't know. Again, at the start, you can maybe think, all right, maybe it's because at that point they still had somewhat of a budget, and you don't know how much the makeup and stuff like that. I mean, I'm getting the production design here. I'm sorry, it's you ahead, but you're just wondering how much. Oh, quick, just bang a couple of scars on him and stick him in front of a camera. We've only got 10 minutes.
But I think that's a fair thing to bring up during acting, though, because it does help or hinder a performance. I mean, you probably would feel scarier and more intimidating, you know, in that makeup than you would with, let's chuck a few scars on you as if you've been slashed with a razor blade a few times. And yeah. now put on a fake Italian accent and try and be intimidating. Talking about, oh, do you think I could be president? Dude, in this day and age, probably, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this, as far as direction and cinematography goes and lighting, at the start, it's spot on. And when you first see or catch a glimpse of Red Skull and he's half in shadow and you see some mangled cheek, you think, ooh, that looks nice. And when he does show up, you know, it's like something from Hellraiser. I could get on board with that. And then, again, it just seems to me like the entire movie's pretty much just let down by the lack of budget. And it makes me wonder, when it comes to things like the scenes with Ronnie Cox and Ned Beatty, I couldn't find any information out on it, but just how long they had them for. I would have imagined most of the stuff was shot in a day just for budgetary purposes.
Possibly. I mean, who knows? If there is more character stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor, you know, 30 minutes plus, and Ronnie Cox says that it was a great script, who knows if there's not way more of Ronnie Cox and Ned Beatty that we haven't yet seen that we might if they ever release this, you know, this supposedly improved director's cut.
Brave New World, it's a perfect time to get it out there, whether they will or not.
Well, who knows? We're still waiting on the supposedly improved Batman Forever and multiple other things that have, you know, that do exist, but they haven't got a physical release and just make the odd appearance at a festival or whatever. But
and for some reason, we got the Snyder Cut. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We got that instead. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've got nothing else to add about the acting. I think we've talked about it more or less at length. Did you have any thoughts, Toby, or were you just basically thinking this along the same lines as us?
I was just following this conversation.
Yeah. Did you have anybody that you think stood out as particularly good, or you know, what did you think of the main guys?
Honestly, not really.
Not much.
Trying to think of anyone.
I like that. Toby, do you have any thoughts about this bunch of people? No.
I mean, Toby, you probably don't know who we're talking about when we say Ronnie Cox and Ned Beatty. It's obviously the president and the reporter guy, who we think are quite, you know, I think me and DK are saying are pretty good. That, you know, they hold their own, but I'm not impressed by the guy playing Captain America or the Red Skull, or even, you know, the woman playing Bernie and Sharon. You know, I don't think anybody really acquits themselves that well.
I mean, the Red Skull is, I don't think the Red Skull performance is that bad. I just think the script is just not doing anything with Red Skull after like the first 15 minutes.
No, that's what I mean. The fact that he supposedly sat on his thumbs for 30 to 50 years assassinating people and then realized, this is not working. It's a bit stupid, really, when you think about it.
I But even then, you could give the Red Skull big moments, fun moments to do with that. Like it's not even that it's badly written. It's just there's nothing written for the Red Skull. It feels like really nothing of interest. Not even bad stuff where you say, oh, okay, I see where they were going for it. There is interesting things happening. What is the plot of the Red Skull in this?
Well, I'll be honest, I had to look it up because there is one. But like you, it's just kind of, it feels like the acting and the script just isn't giving you it. But when I read, I really focused and then looked at the wiki and was like, okay, so the Red Skull's plan is to use mind control gas so that the president turns against his morals and, you know, his environmental crusade and joins the guy who's on their side, who's the general or whatever. But again, you get no hint of really any of this because it's all bogged down in, you know, hilariously stupid jokes at Captain America's expense about like, aha, you have come here, you foolish, you know, American flag waver. Ah, could I be president? Ah, you know, it's all corrupt, really. Ha ha. And he's like, oh, shut up. but yeah. Anyway. I think I surprised myself at my level of disdain right then anyway. But yeah, I mean, it's not great, and nobody really does a good job selling you on things that that need you to be sold, I think, really.
Honestly, probably the best is Sharon, mostly because she has, I think, an easier part, so there's not really it's not a hard acting job, so I think she does probably the most decent job because she doesn't have to do a lot.
No, that's true. I mean, she is the very 1990s typical damsel in distress girlfriend.
Exactly.
But that actress does more when she's playing Bernie and proves that she can do a good enough job. I always feel weird referring, because the character Bernie is clearly supposed to be Peggy. And it's just like, why did we change the name? It doesn't make any sense. There probably was a comic book character called that at some point or something, but it's weird getting my head around it because I'm too much of a nerd. Yeah. Anyway, shall we move to the direction anyway and talk about Albert Pion and his work on this?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So, did you have anything you wanted to say, DK, before I start on this?
Like I said, it starts off well. It starts off moody. I think Pion gets the direction right. I think had he had a budget, and it's hard to tell because I don't think I've seen anything that he's done that does have a budget, so I can't really say for sure. But the fact that he's not a well-known director doesn't bode well, but it's okay. There are, you know, I can't think of any I can't think of any terribly good scenes, I'll put it that way. There is some nice lighting, there is some nice cinematography. For all its cheap vibes and for all its, you know, throwaway, I do like the couple of scenes at the end where the Red Skull's before he plummets. I think it's shot quite well, but that could just be down to the scenery, which I don't know. There's nothing here that I would say, oh, he's the next Spielberg or the next Lynch, or he seems to be very kind of generic, run-of-the-mill action movie.
What you're saying is, at no point were you sitting watching this thinking, well, this is the guy who's going to make the classics Cyborg, Kickboxer 4, The Aggressor. Okay.
Weirdly enough, I wasn't.
No, I mean, I think as much as he's not got the best reputation or, you know, IMDb list, I think Albert Pion does a pretty good job here. There's some things that's good. Like I said, the opening 20 minutes, I think, are really impressive, especially for a film of its time. That first scene just works, and I think he even manages to shock me when after Steve's transformation happens and you get the attack that basically wrecks the place. Even though I know that happens, like I've read the comics, I've seen the first Avenger, I know exactly that that's what happens. There's the great Captain America, then some Nazi agent attacks them so that, you know, you're the last one. It was all just in my head and whatever. And yet I was still shocked when it happened because it was quite jarring and quite well filmed. But again, it kind of gives way into action at the end of the movie that's nothing like that. That seems, to say perfunctory, almost seems like it's giving it too much credit. It's very, you know, choreographed, shall we say.
Again, I find I can only really kind of judge from the first few scenes because, again, you know, it's you don't know how much is affected by the budget into fact yeah. that it's it is almost, and we've talked about it on the show before, but it is almost guerrilla filmmaking, but not intended to be guerrilla filmmaking.
Yeah.
It's just we need to do whatever we can while we can. And when you're doing that, you don't have time to think about the setup very much or the lighting or stuff like that. Whereas in the first few scenes, I think it's quite good. Like I said earlier, I mean, you know, when you first see Skull, it's moody, and those scenes in the household with the kid playing the piano before he's taken by the old fash, they're done very well. It's very hard to judge this as it should be.
Yeah, I mean, my point was just like I said, there's some great action at the start, but it all gets very, you know, WWE as you go on. It's very it doesn't really look like they're making contact, and it's all very scripted and deliberate, and all right, you're doing your best. And at least Captain America is the one here you can get away with, because he is just throwing around a frisbee, so it's hard to mess that up, at least, you know. And you kind of, I did still get the excitement of, like,
I don't know, they managed to do that a couple of times.
Well, maybe, but at least the end point I was kind of like, yeah, I cheered for that. And I mean, I think the way that that Pyun does the kind of decades passing montage, I thought was really quite effective as well. But then within that, they somehow managed to misspell Springfield on screen. And I was like, if that is not just a microcosm of this movie, they missed the G out of Springfield.
Didn't pick up on that. I didn't see that. Yeah.
Springfield, I was laughing for minutes after that. And the fact that when there's like a chase in the woods against Zane, it makes Captain America just look so cheap and stupid. He doesn't look super soldierous. He just looks like a, you know, whatever age Matt Salinger is, regular dude running away from a woman through the woods, trying not to trip. It's feeble. But like you said, on the flip side of that, the lighting and the cinematography is dark. It's moody. It's muted. It really works. It's just that then when you apply that to action scenes, they end up too dark to see what's going on, which might be for the best, in fairness. But and when they do turn the lights on for the kind of car bike chase in Italy, I think it's in Italy, or it is within the film. It's pretty good.
I think it's Yugoslavia. It's supposed to be Italy,
Yugoslavia masquerading as Italy. But I mean, that's like a passable 1990-ish era kind of spy film for a few minutes there, and it's like, all right, you can do it.
That's the vibe that this thing with the direction gives me from. Not just the direction, but the location. It all looks very much like a early 80s Roger Moore Bond movie set up.
Yeah, especially with the location at the end, like I said, which is a beautiful location for the final fight, but it is very, you know, killing Christopher Walken off a blimp kind of kind of moment, yeah.
I do expect to see Topol running around in the background somewhere.
Grace Jones trying to murder somebody.
Yeah.
just one more thing, like I said, I really love the cheesy thumbs up ridiculousness at the end of this movie. But again, either lean into the campness of it or cut that scene, because as it is, it's so jarring. It's so stupid. Like, thank you, God, America. Hey, big thumbs up. It's just super cheesy freeze frame and the patriotic song and everything. I mean, the comic art is great. We didn't need the cheesy song and the patriot, you know, Captain America saved us. No. Anyway, that's my thoughts on the direction. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Toby?
The directing is just—it's interesting. I mean, to be fair, I think I kind of share what you said, that it's not really the director's fault. I don't see anything where I'm like, this is a director's mistake. Not a lot, at least. It's more like, the budget is just not giving anything, and they're trying their best to direct this. And, you know, maybe someone in the script phase should have noticed that this is going to be low budget.
Well, so, I don't think they knew it was kind of, they just ran out of money. That's the problem. But it's hard to disguise someone, that when you've got no money.
Someone should have adapted. Someone should have done something.
Yeah. I mean,
someone needed to catch that. It's
kind of hard to know what to do to pivot that way. I mean, you either end up with a 20-minute movie with just what you've already filmed, or you end up with this, which is try your best to film another hour to stick on the end of it with whatever we can, you know. But cheapness is really hard to hide, and the lack of money really does show, I think, in most of this. Anyway, it does to me. I mean, like I said, there's no real... The action sequences are not anything. Like I said, they're running through the woods or they're throwing a little frisbee or they don't really stand out. So I can see why the supposedly improved director's cut just avoids them entirely, because there's nothing after the first act, at least, that stands out. The first act fight I thought was actually really good, and, you know, ending up on the rocket and everything, that was pretty cool. I liked all that. But anyway, sorry, Toby, I interrupted you. Any other thoughts on the direction?
No, the first act is the best of the movie.
Yeah, and by far.
It just goes downhill after that. Yeah.
Fair enough. So I'm going to come to you, DK, because I think you may have one or two things. I've already mentioned anything I had to say about this. The VFX or the production design? Any thoughts on there that we haven't mentioned
yet? I was shocked to learn that there is early CGI in this.
Is that... Wait,
the only thing I can narrow it down to is when he throws the shield at the surveillance tower, or the rocket where he's, you know.
Oh, yeah, the rocket maybe, yeah.
But if that's CG, ouch. it's... I mean, what can you say? There's not many special effects in here, with, you know, other than the aforementioned rocket, and then you have the rat, which...
Well, we've talked about the old, you know, the old age makeup being bad and the Red Skull makeup being bad after the initial thing, so we've kind of talked about that.
I kind of dug the rat. I kind of dug the little stop motion when it turned around and its eyes blinked. It's...
It was very The Thing, you know, but that's not a bad thing. At least, you know, it wasn't a CGI abomination or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, special effects wise, it's difficult to narrow down, because any special effects that kind of were in favor, you know, were a positive to the movie, again, because of the budget, kind of were done away with in the latter half of the film. Mm-hmm. So all you're left with really is that suit and that shield. And the shield looks like, you know, one of the plastic ones you pick up from the kids' store these days. And as I say, the suit just—I know no human being with proportions like that. It's just insane. I even when I first watched this, I thought that suit doesn't look right. Even though I was trying to kid myself into thinking, yes, looks great. It doesn't. He needed to be a bit more well built or stacked or padded, however you do it up to. I mean, they managed it with. Even disregarding the fact that this did not have the budget of Batman or Batman Returns, you're using the same creature shop, same model shop. Yeah, and if a low-budget TV show like The Flash can get something, while it's not perfect, it looks better than this. Again, I'm passing over a lot of the flaws, because to me, his heart is in the right place, and I can forgive a lot when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, you know, we were both brought up on Classic Who and original Star Trek. So when you see something like this, you can gloss over the flaws. But the special effects, the first half, they were not quite passable. The second half, they were not quite there. And that's the best thing I can describe with production design. And as you say, as we've mentioned, it's pretty much stock location territory that we've seen in, you know, I presume several hundred Poirot adaptations and early 80s James Bond films and that kind of thing. It's unfortunately a shame, because it does just come across as cheap.
It very much comes across as, I hope the behind the scenes staff enjoyed the holiday that they clearly wanted.
Yeah.
they were more concerned about how good the villa was as to, you know, did they have a nice place to film, I guess.
Exactly.
I mean, you've just prompted an idea to slightly detour for a second today. I wasn't going to ask this, but now I'm going to have to. So if it was to happen that Secret Wars comes around and we're doing the kind of multiverse thing, would you like to see this Matt Salinger Captain America turn up in Secret Wars?
I would. I honestly would. I would imagine they would give him a slightly better costume, though.
If he turns up, they better give him the exact same costume, or not at all.
I can't see. I mean, Well, if we're going to do that, then we might as well have the original Doc Strange.
Why not? We can do worse. So, yeah, what about you, Toby? Would you be thrilled if you saw the Matt Salinger Captain America turning up in Secret Wars, jumping through a portal saying, on your left, or something?
Honestly, I'm not sure if this would fit the vibe. I feel like this kind of stuff could work like this, like when what was that movie? I don't know what it's called, but the animated movie for Disney Plus where they had Ugly Sonic.
Oh, the Rescue Rangers movie.
Yeah. But that fit because that was the kind of movie where this would work. I'm not sure if Secret Wars.
It would be very weird.
And
see, the thing is, people wanted Tobey Maguire back. They wanted Andrew Garfield. They wanted Hugh Jackman. Can't see many people clamoring for Matt Salinger. I don't think he's going to be that much.
Put him exclusively in scenes with Deadpool.
Oh God.
I mean, it in a Deadpool movie, I would buy it. Like if Deadpool
should have included him in Deadpool and Wolverine, he should have been in the Void.
That would have been believable because Deadpool is the kind of movie where I would say, you know what, that makes sense. Deadpool does this kind of thing. But I don't know if Secret War. I mean, it would, with everything, depend on the execution, but I just can't see a scene where this would not just come across as completely out of place and jarring.
It would have been good. It would have been good as in, you know, when Deadpool and Wolverine are driving in the car, just him walking down the side of the road, just giving a little salute.
And then trying to fake illness and steal the car.
Yeah. Oh. Why did they not do that?
We've just made a scene that just should have been in that movie. It's definitely simple as that.
As always, we should have
done it. No one would have got it apart from us, and that's only because we've watched this video for this, but still.
It would be so good though, instead of trashing it or whatever, that's how they, you know, they end up having to walk, is that they pull over to help Matt Salinger
and he steals their car.
And he just steals their car. Oh, I would love that. I would love it. Anyway, moving on, as I desperately try and bring sanity back. DK, you're usually a good person to come to for this. What did you think of the music and the sound, such as it was in this movie, if anything?
I don't want to speak ill of the dead.
It's literally all we've been doing.
It is. Barry Goldberg. I'm looking through his discography. I'm seeing a couple of soundtracks for films. I have no fucking idea what they are. It's easy to see. I'm sure he's great. I'm sure he's great at what he did, but this is not one of those things. It's just completely forgettable. Someone said on the YouTube, and I can't think of a better description actually. Someone said on the YouTube video, it is like watching a film that uses a soundtrack from a Super Nintendo game for Captain America. And that's it. Occasionally it fades in, you get a few chords, and it fades back out. And yeah, there's no dynamic, there's no excitement. Sometimes you'll get a score that even when the material is bad that it's scoring, it can lift it. This is just, again, whether it's, you know, they've got 20 pence and 10 pence to use for a mix-up and just use the rest on the score after the film had been shot, I don't know. It seems like something you'd find on a stock site, license-free these days, to just quickly put on a YouTube vid or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I've only made three notes about it. And first of all, the love themes are so awfully cheesy that they feel like they've just picked up a generic background CD from any US soap opera of the time. It's terrible. This is almost amusing, and it's not even the music's fault, but the fact that they have this kind of Captain America hero theme kind of fanfare, but they feel the need to add it for even the littlest thing. So he'll do something ridiculous, like jump over one step and the music will be like, dun, 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 like, you know, like he's conquered the world, and it gets stupid at one point. You know?
They save it for, you know, for stuff like that, not for heavy action sequences, like when he steals a car.
Exactly, yeah. That has to play out in silence for the pure shock factor.
So, I'm not dissing Barry Goldberg. I'm sure what he did in the stuff that I don't know of was fantastic. He's had quite a big career, and I feel ignorant for not knowing his stuff. But as far as this soundtrack goes, it's just a whimper for me.
Yeah. Again, I don't necessarily blame him because there's every chance it's just a simple matter of you get what you pay for. You know what I mean? Yeah. If he's only getting, like you said, 10 pence on a show, but mix up, he's not going to necessarily do his best work, is he?
No.
But cool. Well, I'm going to move us to the next section then as we kind of try to wrap this thing up, which would be the audience response. I did put out the usual prompt on social media asking what people thought about this, if they had seen it. I was surprised how many people had seen
it. Yeah, just let me say this. You bastards out there. All of these films that we do, and this is the shit you drop feedback for?
Well, we haven't heard what it says yet, and there's a little bit less than I thought, but still it was quite easy to gather some, and it isn't always. It's often like pulling teeth, but I'm just going to jump straight in and say, first of all, from the Facebook group Northeast Retro Den, NERD, Sean Dixon says, I'd forgot about this. I want to find it again now. James Innes says, was watching this again a few nights ago. Totally love it. Lost count how many times I've seen it. From the group 80s and 90s movies, Jason Spooner says, not as bad as people would have you believe, but certainly not great. Let's see. From, what's this? This is my personal threads page. Bubba Wheat says, the ears in big capital letters. It's weird but fun. It's crazy that Cap carjacked someone by faking sick not once but twice. Yeah. Daryl underscore 823 says, I watched it when it came out on video. I didn't think it was bad at the time for what it was. Those fake ears on the mask were messed up, though. And Josky 1965 says, they spent most, if not all, of the budget on the first 20 minutes set in the 40s, and then it went downhill fast. I think a lot of agreement on that one. From the Facebook group again, Cinema of the 90s and Beyond, Alex Razos says, I love this film. It may not have had the budget, but it had a lot of heart. David Barber says, I watched it as a kid on BBC One. At the time, I liked it, and it passed the time with its action scenes, but give me Chris Evans any day. From my Blue Sky page, at Paddy Dublums says, yeah, I've seen it. It has a fully loaded cast, but the story is for the birds. I heard there's a new version of this film that is supposedly better. Back to Facebook, Parallel Universes of Marvel and DC. Michael Rauch says, that movie sucked so much, it was horrible. One of the worst superhero movies I've ever seen. From 80s and 90s movies, Adam Balfour says, it's about the same quality as Dolph Lundgren's Punisher. Take that as you will.
Oh, God, yeah, I forgot that one.
Yeah, I did briefly as well. And that's it. That was the extent of the feedback that I had on this one. So, not glowing praise and a few kind of vitriolic comments, I would say. So, yeah, thanks anyway for all those of you who have seen this movie. God bless you. And for those who commented. And, yeah, we're going to get into explaining our thoughts about it now, starting with what I always do when I'm on my hosting duties, which is to go around and ask favorite character moment and line. This is going to be fun, having to find one of these things for each thing. So, DK, I'm going to start with you. What was your favorite character and why?
I can't even remember his name, but Ned Beatty's character.
I don't recall his character's name either. No,
exactly.
The reporter.
Yeah, great impression it made. I like his enthusiasm. I like that he's pretty much an audience surrogate, and Ned Beatty's always good. He's never let me down in anything I've seen. He was a fantastic actor. And he's just immensely likable. And I think that helps in.
Can you imagine being in this film and also being in Superman the movie?
I know. He must have thought, oh, what happened? The thing is, though, I can imagine him and Ronnie Cox sat around here on set saying, dude, we were in Deliverance.
Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling.
Yeah. So, it's going to be Ned Beatty's character for me.
Fair enough. Toby, dare I ask you if you have a favorite character and why?
Just for the audacity, it's the Red Skull. Just for the audacity of making. and the double audacity to just play it completely straight for no reason.
Fair enough.
Wow.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I said... Ronnie Cox, I think, comes close for me as an idealistic president, but that just seems like a pipe dream. And in the end, I've got to go with Cap. The cheesy thumbs up just seals it for me. I love it. Cool. Favorite moment? This is going to be a complete wash, I suspect, but DK, favorite moment in the movie?
I honestly cannot think of anything. I could possibly describe as a favorite moment. So I'm just going to go for the first carjacking.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. What about you, Toby?
I think the best moment, and it's getting undermined by the movie later for no reason, is when he first comes back and meets Bernie again. I think that's a very sweet moment.
That's cool. That's a good choice.
Then they just kill her 5 minutes later for no reason, and it's
because he has to start making out with her daughter.
Of course, that's important.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought we were all going to say the same thing.
Is she too old now?
Of course, yeah. That's how it works. But yeah, I really thought we were all going to say the same thing, which would have been my answer, which is the first 20 minutes, well, 15 to 20 minutes, whatever it is, the actual opening act was the best part for me, and then it kind of did go downhill. I mean, the action scenes at the end aren't the worst thing I've ever seen, but they're not as good. Yeah. And do you have a favourite line, DK?
it's gonna be that one that I mentioned earlier, the old
an American. I need help with my English lesson.
Because yep. It's just so absurd.
Obnoxious, I think, is the word, isn't it? Yeah, cool. Toby, anything at all?
I don't think anything of the dialogue is worth the praise to mention here.
I actually have two, so you can take one of mine if you. So there's a line where Sharon's taking the mick about like, oh, put something in the paper, and I love the way that she sarcastically says, "Outdated superhero seeks billionaire former child prodigy with one hand and heavily reconstructed face." Like, yep, that's the movie. And then at the very end, in a slightly more serious note, "You remain a clownish symbol that no one cares about. I care." Which I think you're like, oh, okay, that's almost heartfelt for a second there. So, yeah, I'll give you two since Toby didn't give you anyone. Right, so I have a massively long conclusion, as per Blum and usual, so I'm going to leave mine till last. So, Toby, do you want to start us off with any conclusions you can gather from this and your score out of 5 stars and stripes? Haha.
This movie, well... There's room for everything. Let's just say that. There's room for everything.
Movies exist. This was certainly something that I watched for 90 minutes.
This was a movie.
I mean, I still think the general ideas are not terrible. I feel like the plot is actually pretty solid. The script is just absolute garbage. And the budget is just not there for any of it. And that's kind of a shame, I think. I think this could have been not an amazing movie, but like a solid movie, an okay movie. I don't know. I mean, the budget could have been fixed. I don't know who would have fixed the script.
I mean, we haven't asked this just before you give your score, but would you honestly be interested in seeing the supposedly improved director's cut with like half an hour of more footage and more supposedly serious tone and everything?
Honestly, because I think the character moments are probably the best part of this movie. So I think if you have a cut that's more focused on that, it could be better. I don't know if I had enough motivation to check it out, but I think it's potentially better. I'm not sure if I would still want to watch it.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I understand.
Think once is enough.
Yeah, so what would you give this this film then out of 5 stars? Don't say live a little and then give it 5, whatever you do.
No. I don't know if I'm being too nice or too harsh about this score.
Be as harsh or as nice as you like. I mean, we haven't given our scores yet. So.
I mean, I gave it a 2.5, I think.
Okay, all right.
I'm not sure. But it's still, it's better than Morbius and The Flash. So.
you have a point. Fair enough. Awesome.
I can buy it. Then... every other superhero movie I've watched is better than that. It's just Morbius and...
Well, and The Flash.
Flash. Well, I haven't seen Kraven, so who knows? It could be terrible.
I really wouldn't bother. If I were you. But
I don't want to.
No, you're not missing much. DK, take it away. Conclusion and score for Captain America. Both of you have just groaned audibly when I've asked you to rate this.
No, it's not great, but I do find it hard to judge because what was intended and what was here is not the same thing, even more so than on normal productions. It does have a lot of heart, but heart doesn't make up for everything.
Everything else, yeah.
Yeah, so weirdly enough, though, I do enjoy it. I do like it, and I think it's because I saw it as, I saw it when I was younger, and again, it's down to that heart. It's at least it embodies to try and capture the spirit of the character. And in that sense, I would much, much rather watch this than sit through Batman and versus Superman again.
Yeah, again, hard to argue with you. A load of Snyder fans have all tuned out.
I don't know.
So,
I mean, Batman versus Superman was also bad. To the point that I just didn't bother. And whatever came after Justice League, I don't care. I don't want to watch it. Especially not the Snyder cut. Anyway, it's 4 hours long. It's the most insane thing to me.
DK, we haven't had a score from you yet. I'm on tenterhooks over here.
No, I'm probably gonna be maybe the highest to rank it, but I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's just middle of the road. It's a 2.5 for me.
Wow. Okay. So you both gave it the exact same score. Intriguingly, so apologies for this long-winded conclusion. I was trying to get all my thoughts out. So I said, not every film we review can be a 5-star masterpiece, and 1990s Captain America certainly falls far from that mark. That said, there's a certain charm in its low-budget, dated approach that might appeal to fans of character-driven old-school adaptations. At times, it feels reminiscent of the Bill Bixby-Lou Ferrigno Incredible Hulk series, offering a simpler, more grounded take on larger-than-life characters, something that might resonate more with nostalgic viewers than with comic book purists or those raised on the modern MCU. Let's be honest, though, this is not a good movie. Its cheapness is glaring throughout, with the first two acts severely lacking in action, and the plot feels plodding and dull. The first Avenger showed how much depth there is to Cap's origin story, making it puzzling that the film rushes through it in just 25 minutes, ironically the most well-made part of the movie, as the behind-the-scenes details have explained. That said, there's still some fun to be had, particularly in a drunk watch or MST3K-style setting. The odd moments, questionable acting and baffling creative choices, like changing Red Skull's nationality and fixing his face, provide plenty of material to laugh at with friends. I almost feel bad criticizing it, as director Albert Pyun does an admirable job with the limited resources he had, and apparently the better director's cut does exist. The cast isn't the main problem either. Matt Selinger may not quite have the screen presence to carry a film of this nature, but he's not dreadful. Meanwhile, veteran actors Ned Beatty and Ronnie Cox deliver genuinely good performances, adding some credibility to an otherwise flimsy production. Ultimately, Captain America is worth a watch if you're a particularly curious Marvel fan or just looking for a light, unintentionally funny film to enjoy with friends. However, it's very much a product of its time and budget. So while there's a certain nostalgic charm, it ultimately serves a reminder of how far comic book movies have come and how much better Captain America deserves. And I actually gave it 2 out of 5, the lowest of us all, which is a rarity. So, by adding those scores together and dividing it by all of us here, the final score for Captain America might be one of the lowest scores we've ever had on a movie we've reviewed. It gets a 2.3 out of 5 final score. I think that's possibly the first and only time up to now that we've had a film that we can officially say was a miss. It came under exact middle ground when we finally finished it and reviewing it. 2.3, just not great, to say the least. So, what do you guys think of that? Fair? Harsh?
I think it's fair.
Hard to argue.
Yeah.
Cool. That's that then. So that's a wrap on our Captain America review. And as we heroically walk off into the sunset, it just remains to give a huge thank you to DK, as always. Thanks for joining me, buddy.
No worries. I do have to give you a shout out that in my 2 years now of doing cult movies, I've never done a film as cheap or as bad as this one.
Yeah, see, it's not just GK's cult classics that you can find the gems
extended with sarcasm. I'm really going to have to try harder next season.
I look forward to watching Birdemic.
Tommy Wiseau has entered the chat.
And thanks, of course, to Toby for joining us once again. Thanks, Toby. Did you have a good time here?
You're with the movie.
I meant the podcast, but I think either way, we kind of know the answer, really. So, Toby, where can our listeners find you on the socials for some things that might interest you a bit more than this?
On Blue Sky, the best of the worst of social media.
Yeah. I mean, it's all pretty bad. And you're at Dark Sonic on Blue Sky, is that right?
Yeah. I don't have any. Need to put my year of birth on Blue Sky because nobody claimed my username over there.
Fair enough. And don't forget, you can also check out our link tree in the episode descriptions to find all our social media and more. Or just look on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. It'll always be flashed up there as well. Before we go, make sure to tune in to our sister channel, Hit or Miss Who Trek, in just a few days, where we're warping in with a full series review of Star Trek Lower Decks. It's going to be a lot of fun, that one. And coming up in a couple of weeks right here, our very first Silver Screen Cinema Classics episode of the year, where DK gets his wish and we dive into one of his favourite classics, Arsenic and Old Lace. So finally, to you, viewers and listeners, sincere thanks for tuning in, if you have through this and maybe laughed along with us. Until next time, God bless you, Captain America.
Thumbs up.
You have been listening to the Silver Screen Podcast, hosted by Mike Wilson and DK. Behind the Scenes section by DK. Additional material by Mike Wilson. Follow us on social media, our YouTube channel, or wherever you get your podcasts. Link to all of these places can be found via the link tree listed in this episode's description. This podcast is a Media Matters original production, created, produced, and edited by Mike Wilson. We'd love it if you'd like, subscribe, and share us around like a beloved old video cassette. We hope to see you next time for more movie magic. Until then, remember, life moves pretty fast, so stop and watch a movie now and then.